I'm Kevin Hatchard, and this is the Ultimate Sports Podcast.
And I'm Russell Hargreaves. Here's what's in store for you this week.
The Andre Villas-Boas era has begun at Spurs, but has AVB learned from his mistakes at Chelsea?
There are two huge boxing matches for British fight fans to look forward to this weekend. We'll preview Khan versus Garcia and Hay against Chisora.
This year's Open Golf gets underway next week at Royal Lytham. We'll give you the rundown on the main contenders.
And as London 2012 gets ever closer, we'll hear from one of the greatest Olympians of all time. Our reporter Lee Peters gets an exclusive interview with Sir Stephen Redgrave.
Well, we'll start with football and a big appointment that we knew was happening, but it's been confirmed this week. Andre Villas-Boas, who of course was sacked after just 9 months with Chelsea, he's been appointed as the new manager of Spurs, the successor to Harry Redknapp. He's talked about the title already. What's your assessment of this appointment?
I'm not entirely sure, Kevin. When it was mooted, shall we say, a few weeks ago, when he was one of the four or five major names that were thrown into the ring to replace Harry at White Hart Lane, I was a little bit sceptical. That probably hasn't changed massively. I just think one or two people he's brought in are promising. Jan Vertonghen, of course, subject to a medical, is an excellent player. Sigurdsson as well has come in too. So obviously, AVB has really tried to sort of sharpen up that squad and stamp his authority already. There's talk that the likes of Luka Modric could be leaving the club and other key players as well. So there's clearly going to be a bit of a watershed period. I just wonder, looking back to what happened at Chelsea, Kevin, he came in with an agenda that admittedly was brought from above him of getting rid of various key senior players. It didn't go down well. His approach was clearly a little bit too abrasive and abrupt, and a lot of players didn't like it. I think the big questions are, has he learnt from that? And also, this time around under Daniel Levy at Spurs, is there less of a mandate for him to be that brutal as well? Can he relate to the players a bit more and make the changes I've mentioned in a more subtle and gradual and appealing way?
It was almost a uniquely difficult situation for him at Chelsea, wasn't it? Because he, of course, had worked under Jose Mourinho as a scout, a guy who would check out the opposition. He would put together a DVD of their strengths and weaknesses. It's tough for a guy to be the guy who handed out the DVDs to then come back years later and try and manage the same squad. That was always going to be a tough ask, wasn't it?
Yes, and hopefully he hasn't been handing out too many DVDs at the Lane in his earlier days. So you're right, he will come in, Kevin, with a different agenda this time. And I just fear, though, is he still slightly tainted goods in terms of what happened? We might make some excuses for what happened at Chelsea, but ultimately his time there was pretty disastrous, let's be frank. He took the club down the table. They were about to go out of Europe, and it was really only Roberto Di Matteo coming in that obviously saved the season. Incredibly, they won the Champions League and the FA Cup. I'm pretty sure they wouldn't have done either of those things had AVB stayed. He clearly is a good manager, though. We look at his track record in Portugal. It's excellent. But I just fear that maybe he should have gone away and had a couple of years away from the Premier League and away from a top club, another London club as well. Perhaps if he'd come back after another good spell on the continent, maybe things would have been a bit smoother. So I have a feeling this might not work. But I still wish him all the best, obviously.
Well, before we move on, let's hear from the man himself. He says that his move to White Hart Lane isn't about proving a point.
It's not a mission of restoring my reputation. It's a mission to put Tottenham back on track with titles. For me, after the Chelsea step, was important to choose somewhere where I was surrounded with the right commitment and the right people. And I think I found it. And I'm extremely privileged to be here.
The views there of Andre Villas-Boas. We shall wait and see how that one goes. Next on to the boxing we mentioned earlier. Two massive, massive fights to look forward to this weekend. Let's start with the one in Las Vegas, where I was on holiday a matter of weeks ago. Amir Khan up against Danny Garcia. And Kevin, looking at the build-up to this one, obviously there was a fairly brutal press conference earlier in the week. And Garcia, the man from Philadelphia, certainly means business, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does, but I wonder how much of it is bluster, to be honest, and the kind of traditional pre-fight hype. I think his father has got involved far too much for my liking. This is a very interesting one for Amir Khan because he's had a tough year. He had the defeat to Lamont Peterson, which was highly controversial. Saw him lose his belts, but obviously he's had one of them reinstated since Lamont Peterson, of course, was found guilty of a doping offence. I worry that Khan occasionally makes these messes himself. If you look back at the Peterson fight, as controversial as it was, as irregular as the judging was, he should have won the fight. He should have kept his foot on the accelerator, he should have beaten Peterson easily. I actually thought Peterson performed very well, but he was encouraged to perform well after those first few rounds where Khanna dominated. And Amir, just occasionally, the mental side of his game just drops off a little bit. Physically, he's still got the fastest hand speed I've ever seen of a boxer of that weight. I think he's exceptionally gifted. He is getting more powerful, so no problems there. But when you look at the losses that he's had to Bredis Prescott, I think he took that fight too lightly and he was knocked out. And to Lamont Peterson, he let that one get away from him when really he should have dominated the fight. That's my only worry, because I feel Garcia is a far inferior opponent.
He has talked about beefing up the power in his punches, though, Kevin, yeah, hasn't he? Which is going to be interesting to see whether he can do that, but also keep the hand speed that you mentioned. It's a tricky two things to try and maintain at once. Anyway, the other big fight, David Haye up against Derek Chisora after those unbelievable scenes after the Klitschko fight with Chisora in the post-match media conference. Shocking scenes, really. The fact that this is taking place at all is highly debatable. Sanctioned by the Luxembourg body, as we know.
Yeah.
It really does kind of smack of a, I wouldn't say an odd setup, but certainly a very, very controversial one.
There's something really sad about it, to be honest, because as a big fight fan for many years, and somebody who's a big fan of David Haye as well, there's something really sad about him slowly dismantling what would have been quite a good legacy as a boxer. You know, you go back a few years, David Haye said that he was going to unify the cruiserweight division. He did that with some excellent wins over Jean-Marc Mormec and Enzo Macarinelli. Really good performances. He then said, I'm going to step up to heavyweight. And even though he doesn't have, you know, a heavyweight's power and a heavyweight's bulk, he said, I'm going to step up to heavyweight and I'm going to win a title. And that's exactly what he did. He beat Nikolai Valuev in a very clever way. He boxed him at range. Valuev, of course, a giant guy who'd got used to kind of barreling through people and just dominating them with his huge size. But he was able to pick him off at range and he was able to pick up an excellent victory. He then, of course, beat John Ruiz, and that was a good win as well against a veteran. But then it started to go wrong. I mean, the Audley Harrison fight was a joke, as we know. Lord knows why he picked that fight, apart from the obvious financial rewards, but that harmed his reputation. And the defeat to Vladimir Klitschko, in itself, not a disgrace. Klitschko, of course, a champion who deserves a lot of respect. But the moaning about the toe injury, the excuses,
the display in general as well.
Yeah, and then after that, I mean, he froze. He froze in the headlights. That's the thing. But then after that, of course, we had this nonsense with the brawl with Chisora. And now the fact that he's taking this fight and he's come out of retirement to take a fight against a guy who really is a nobody. I mean, he did well to take Vitali Klitschko all the way in their fight, took it to points, but he was never going to win that fight. And you've got a guy who, you know, not long ago lost to Tyson Fury. So this is a sad way for Haye to wind down his career. It's a fight that obviously people are interested in because it's a grudge match. But in terms of quality, it's not going to be that great. I would expect Haye to win it. I would expect him to box Chisora at range and maybe win it on points. I can't see, unless Haye really slips, I can't see Chisora finding a way to win. But it shouldn't be happening.
No, I would agree with you. There we go. Well, one thing that clearly should be happening and does every year and has for 100 odd years is the Open Golf Championship underway next week at the lovely course of Royal Lytham St Anne's up near Blackpool. Going to be a cracking tournament, and it'll be intriguing to see who can get that coveted claret jug. I'd say it's probably one of the most opens, pardon the pun, in many a year.
Yeah, well, obviously we come round to the majors, and there's always the set from a British point of view. There's always the same questions. It's guys like, can Lee Westwood finally win his first one? Can Luke Donald translate that superb form that he shows week in, week out on both the European Tour and the PGA Tour into a major win? And obviously, Rory McIlroy, can he find a bit of form? He's really slumped since that US Open success. And there's always the potential. You've said it's the most open for a while. And of course, Darren Clark surprised us all, I think, by winning it last year. So Do you see any surprises, or do you think we're talking about the same kind of pack of guys competing?
It's going to be interesting. I think, you know, we look this year in terms of the majors, it's been very much that sort of middle tier of American players that have been there or thereabouts for quite a while that have really come to the fore. We saw Bubba Watson, of course, at Augusta win the Masters in swashbuckling style. That followed by Webb Simpson's excellent display at the US Open in San Francisco to just about get past Graham McDowell in what was a very, very exciting and gritty finish. Simpson really timing his charge on the final day quite brilliantly and holding putts as well. So you look at that middle tier of Americans in the world rankings, you've got people like Jason Duffner, who a bit like Luke Donald is incredibly consistent, a late bloomer in his mid-30s now, playing very, very well indeed. You've got Hunter Mahan, who's there, Matt Kuchar, they're all inside the world's top 10. Ricky Fowler isn't too far away as well, the exciting youngster. I just wonder whether this year it's going to be that kind of middle tier of American players that really fight back after the Europeans have dominated the majors. You mentioned Lee Westwood. Injury problems of late are a concern heading in. He's historically not done brilliantly at the Open, but in recent years has started to post a couple of decent finishes. Luke Donald's Open record isn't strong. And maybe Justin Rose. I think if I was going to pick somebody from the British section, I think Justin, world number 8 or 9 at the moment, some good finishes, won a big world golf event at the end of last season, which has given him plenty of confidence. I think perhaps he's probably the form horse out of all the British contenders. Darren Clarke, absolutely no chance, I'm afraid. It was a fairy tale story that he won it last year, but again, severe injury problems. He'd be the first to admit his game has stunk really as well over the last year, where he's missed cut after cut. I'm going to say Justin Rose if any of the Europeans or the Brits were to do it, and I think perhaps one of those Americans I mentioned as well would be a safe each way bet.
And I think we've had 15 majors in a row now won by different people. That's an extraordinary stat, really, when we were used to Tiger Woods obviously dominating for so long.
And Tiger is the other thing we were going to say as well. Of course, he has won 3 Open Championships, but not since Royal Liverpool back in 2006. Is Tiger ever going to get back to that consistency that you need to win a major? We've seen him win a couple of big-ish US Tour events this season, Kevin. We've seen him be there or thereabouts, but he's fallen away in the majors. He's had one bad round, and the Woods of old would put together 4 great rounds. Yeah. But now, each tournament he plays, or most of them, he has one bad round that fires him out of contention, and I'm not sure that he's quite ready in his game and his mental approach is quite there yet to win a major. So I suspect his weight may go on.
And just to chuck in one long shot, one each way bet just before we move on. Paul Laurie's had a decent run of form, and if the weather's not great, that might suit him, and he's won it before.
He drives the ball very well now. If he could have driven the ball like this about 15 years ago, he could have won an awful lot more. But in his early to mid-40s, he suddenly worked out how to hit it long and straight. And his short game and his approach play has always been excellent. And as you say, if the wind blows, you never know.
There's a chance. OK, we'll finish with a bit of a treat for you this week. London 2012 is getting ever closer, and it's time to hear from one of the greatest Olympians of all time, rowing legend Sir Steve Redgrave. He's an ambassador for Team Visa, and he's been speaking to our reporter, Lee Peters.
Well, thanks for that, Kev. Yes, as you said there, I had the honour and privilege to interview Sir Steve Redgrave this week to look ahead to the Olympic Games. Steve is a Team Visa ambassador, and we got the opportunity to speak at the Hyde Park Superstore, an impressive marquee with all the official merchandise that you can want, really, from the Olympic Games, showcasing Visa's contactless and now mobile payment technology. Team Visa is an initiative that sponsors Team GB, and this year it's been bigger than ever. They've literally sponsored every single member of the Great Britain Olympic and Paralympics team, providing them with finances and advice, mentoring from the likes of Sir Steve Redgrave and as well Baroness Grey Thompson. So looking ahead to the Games, I spoke to Sir Steve and asked him, does he think these will be the best Games ever?
I'm almost guaranteed that the President of the IOC will stand up at the closing ceremony and say, these are the best Games ever. That's always the case. I think these will be. I think that we've pushed the infrastructure forward in some ways. That's a usable legacy from that point of view. I think it's going to be absolutely fantastic. Where you say we've been planning this for the last 7 years. I was involved in the bid, so 5 years before that as well. So there's been a lot of people putting a lot of time and effort in, a lot of them are volunteers basis of that. And I remember when I was asked at the end of 2000 if I would get involved in the bid process. I'm thinking 2012, because that seems so long away. I can't believe that it's coming around. And there's been the countdown process to it all. And you think, yeah, no, it'll come. And then suddenly it's here, and it'll be upon us. Like the last 2 weeks, the games will start, and it will all go very, very quickly. Well, home games is that our teams, whoever has a host team, normally performs better. I think during the history, you can look back, and there's only been one game that hasn't been the case, and that was 1948. But there were reasons for that. We staged the games very late because it was supposed to go to Athens, and they couldn't do it, so it came here. But we have got our best prepared team ever. I think that we've got more sports with more chances than ever before. I think that we will be well up the medal table. We're not going to compete with America and China. We're always looking for fourth place. But the Russians haven't been performing as well as they have been in previous years. So there may be a very slim chance of pipping them for third place. But our core sports of sailing, rowing and cycling will still be our core sports, but athletics have got a number of good chances. Swimming's got excellent chances. We're favourites in there's only two gold medals in triathlon, and we're favourites for both of them. That all the sports are stepping up to the mark, and I think that our athletes are going to do us really proud.
There's some impressive words there, really encouraging words from Sir Steve Redgrave there, a man who knows the Olympics inside out. And let's hope that the work that he has done with Visa and Team Visa will really come to fruition this summer and bring Team GB and Paralympics GB its record medal haul.
Okay, that's it for this week from Lee, Russell and myself. It's goodbye for now.
Bye.